Hello and welcome back to another episode of Dua Lipa at Your Service, a podcast series in which I sit down with guests who inspire me deeply. Today's guest is the one and only Charlie XCX, whose conversation with me was equal parts insightful and delightful. Each week, we've been asking you to send us an email and tell us what list you'd like from me. Thank you so much to everyone who has written in so far. Our listener Ryan Parker said, "Dear Dua, I just want to let you know how much I love your newsletter and the podcast series. Having just heard the episode with Monica Lewinsky, I feel so enriched, as always, by your conversations. In terms of lists and recommendations, I would be really interested in hearing what music you like to listen to, apart from your own, when it's in the making." Hey, Ryan, thank you so much for your question. That's a really good one. I feel like I have to go onto my music and see what I've been listening to. Sometimes I can get really stuck in my world while I'm writing for my own album, but sometimes I do like to wind down. And recently I've been listening to a lot of Green Tea Peng. I love the song Stuck in the Middle, and also Cleo Soul. Her voice just kind of calms me. I love listening to her music. First of all, thank you so much for the kind words, Ryan. I really, really appreciate hearing that. And if you're like Ryan and want to hear a particular list from me, be sure to write in to podcast@service95.com and ask. You never know. I might just answer your email on next week's episode. After this short break, please stay tuned for my conversation with my friend, the incredible Charlie XCX. Welcome back, everyone. I'm so thrilled to have another actual real-life mate on this week's episode. Charlie XCX is one of the most exciting voices in pop music, and she's also one of the people I'm proudest to call a peer and a friend. Charlie has forged a path in music that's totally singular and thrilling to watch. Posting songs on MySpace in the mid-2000s, she soon rose to international fame with appearances on hits she co-wrote like I Love It and Fancy, as well as smashes of her own like 2021's Good Ones. She's released 5 official studio albums, True Romance, Sucker, the self-titled Charlie, the pandemic album How I'm Feeling Now, and this year's Crash, as well as 2 mixtapes and an EP. She's opened for massive stadium and arena tours for the likes of Taylor Swift, Halsey, Coldplay, and Katy Perry, and has been selling out dates left and right on her incredible Crash tour, which comes to a close in Mexico City next month. While you all know Charlie from her top-notch music and videos, I know her as being one of the most open and honest voices in the industry. She's transparent, she's upfront, and a one-of-a-kind performer, creative, songwriter, and entertainer. Throughout our conversation, we touched on a lot of shared ground, what it's like having expectations placed on you as a woman in music, how to find your own voice and stand your ground, how to balance work and life when your brain always wants you to be creating. It was an incredibly fun chat to have, and I hope you all enjoy it as much as we did. Please welcome this week's At Your Service guest, Charlie XCX.
Hey.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Where are you right now?
I'm in LA. Are you in Mexico?
I'm in Mexico City, yeah, so our time zones aren't too...
Oh, that's not bad. Sorry, I'm just trying to get my dog out of the room. Nico,
that's all right.
Bye, Nico. Go. She's so sweet, but she's so stupid.
Oh,
she is so dumb. Like,
what kind of dog is she? Because I feel like you got a couple dogs like a while ago, and then
yeah, she's a pit mix. The other dog is my best friend's dog who used to live with me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. How's the tour been? How's the Crash tour been?
Yeah, it's it's been amazing. For me, it's like coming to the end a little bit now. I've got like festivals and I'm going to South America in a few weeks. I'm not sure when this comes out, but
I'm very excited. You're going to
have
such a good time.
The energy there is so amazing. I mean, I've seen some of the things that you've been posting and it just looks so fun. But you know what? Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, touring's brutal. Like, it's brutal. Mm. And whilst it's like really amazing to, you know, go and like live the music live, for me, I don't know how you find it, because obviously I know you've been on like pretty like heavy tour, like constantly. I do find that it takes its toll on my mental health. And I have this like sweet spot of being able to like really, really love and enjoy it and feel so good for like 6 weeks. And then after 6 weeks, I'm kind of like, I need freedom. Like, because it's so funny, like being a musician and especially working in like pop as we do, you know, I feel like until tour, there is like no such thing as a schedule. We're like flying here, going there, like doing like 5 million things at the same time, like dressing up as like 50 different versions of ourselves, like recording songs, like going to, you know, it's constant. And then finally, when you get on tour, you're like, oh my gosh, like I wake up, I like exercise, I prep for the show, I do the show. Mm-hmm. And that's like really amazing until it's just not. And then I feel, I'm like, I need my life, you know?
Yeah, because it's, so, you know, it feels like we need a routine and a routine is great, but also having to create a new routine in every single city and trying to figure out what your favorite place is, waking up in a new room, like where do you like to go and grab a coffee? All those things kind of do take a toll. It's not really an actual routine because it changes so much.
Totally. And I feel like, I don't know about you, but I used to find it easier, but now I find it hard to be creative on the road. Like, I feel like, especially now that I've like started dancing, I mean, you've always danced, but I feel like you've like stepped it the fuck up. Like, Dua, you're killing it. The dancing and the show.
Thank you.
I haven't seen the show yet, but I actually think
I'm trying to like come and see the Crash tour as well. It's just
we're playing in Delaware next week together.
The same day?
Yeah. I'm playing right before you. So I'm actually finally going to be able to see the show. So excited because I feel like it seems that we've both been on this like kind of dance journey at like roughly the same time. And for me, like, I mean, I have such huge respect. Not that I didn't before, but I just didn't really understand before. But for like professional dancers and for artists who dance, like I'm wiped after a show. Like I used to go and party. There is just no way. I just can't do it.
Yeah,
like, physically,
yeah.
My body, I'm just like, I can't do it. And that makes me, when I'm so tired, it feels very hard to be like creative, like in the 3 hours that I have. Because honestly, I'm just like, I need to just like lie down and like watch House of Dragon or whatever, you know. I don't know how you feel.
I feel you. I mean, I was never able to really write on the road, like especially during this tour. I've been on the road now for pretty much all of this year, and only when I've had like months off where I'm like, okay, I'm stationary, I'm home, I'm sleeping in my own bed, now I can like be creative because somehow I feel like rested. I think like the travel schedule is kind of nuts, you know, going from one place to another. So it's just kind of finding my feet, trying to do something like see something in every city, especially if I haven't been there before. I guess as someone who knows you, and I also know that you're always working, and if you're not working, you're always thinking about music, tour, visuals, you know, there's always, that's that Leo energy, I have to say. It's like high octane, wants to be everywhere, do everything. And it's great because it's what makes you. But I guess what I want to know is, how do you find the balance, feeding that kind of creative instinct and also making time for yourself? And I know you touched on it a little bit with like, you know, when you're like dancing a lot, all you want to do is chill and watch TV. But is there like something else that, you know, helps you kind of ground yourself in all the madness?
Honestly, like my relationship, which we haven't had a chance to like,
I know, catch up. Bits.
I've just sort of found a person who really grounds me, and I've been in like relationships before. I've been in relationships with musicians before and not musicians, but this person, I don't know. It's kind of, not to get too like mushy, but it's kind of just like...
No, it's sweet, and you should enjoy it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's good for you.
Yeah, it does feel really good for me. And, you know, he understands like the life that I lead, which I think sometimes has been part of the problem, you know. He understands it without it like being like in any way competitive or anything like that, which I feel like can sometimes
be super important, yeah.
You know? And so, honestly, like, not to like put all of my like happiness and well-being on another person,
But being with him,
yeah, that's been really, I can like switch off when I'm with him, when I'm just like, there's no, my mind stops racing. Like, I know you're saying like the Leo energy, like you're a Leo too, maybe you have it too. Like, I'm constantly just like tick, 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 go, 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 go. And it takes like a huge force to be able to like make that stop. And he is that force, like, without even trying. So yeah, that I think. And also I think recently just kind of like doing, this sounds so obvious, but like doing things that like don't involve my phone. Like, you know, last night, like I made a curry and then I like went and like saw a couple of friends and just like left everything like behind, you know, stuff like that. Just like really grounds me. And I've started doing hot yoga as well. Like, who knew? Like, I know it's been in existence forever, but I just started, changed my life.
Yoga's the best.
You're really good. Oh my God, I saw your Vogue thing where you did the headstand in heels and I was like, damn, that's
yoga's
impressive.
Changed my life for sure. I think just having that kind of hour to yourself to not think about anything and just focus on your body. And I think a good relationship too. For me this year, I've not been in a relationship for a very long time.
Right.
And it's been kind of the opposite. It's been really great to just be alone and like only think about myself and kind of be quite selfish, which I've never really had the opportunity to do. But when you find someone that really softens you and like calms you down, I think it is the Leo thing.
Totally.
Without getting too like astro with it. it makes a big difference.
How long have you been doing yoga for?
I've been doing yoga for like 7 years, really.
Oh, wow.
Just like hot yoga and stuff. But I've only just this year on tour taken a teacher with me.
Cool.
My friend Annie. And so she's like really honed it in for me.
Oh, that's amazing. So you're kind of like doing it every day on tour?
Every day. And it's I just love it. It makes such a difference, honestly, for your body, especially when you're dancing and, you know, performing. Just getting your body stronger is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to get in a little bit about your crash era.
Okay.
And I've been diving in and like doing some research, which already feels weird, like going in and doing research on your mate, because I'm like, okay, I'm like reading all these interviews and stuff. And it's been really fun and exciting doing it. So I've really, really enjoyed it. I might research all my mates. And it seems like a lot of the headlines seem to focus on how you've described this as your sellout era.
Right.
Like before you started rolling out, you know, Crash, you kind of tweeted like, you said, imagine if this entire album campaign was just a commentary on navigating the major label system and the sadistic nature of pop music as a whole. Another thought, what if I just love pop music and want to be super famous?
Right.
And for those listeners that are unfamiliar with what that might mean in the context of your career, can you tell me what you meant by calling it a sellout era?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I suppose like I've always enjoyed like the dichotomy of my experience in the music industry, which has been like having global like commercial success in the mid to earlier part of my career versus really diving off the deep end and kind of like exploring the underground and the kind of like club music roots and world that I came from and the DIY kind of nature of the way that like I used to make music and a lot of my collaborators make music. That tension in between those two quite polar opposite things has always been this kind of like narrative around me as an artist. Sometimes it's kind of been like, oh, she's like the only person who can straddle these two worlds. And sometimes it's been like, she's failing at both worlds. Sometimes it's been she's succeeding at both worlds. Sometimes it's been like, you can't be one without the other. Sometimes it's been like, oh, she's like a flop because she explores this other side. And then other times it's like, oh, she's like too mainstream now. So there's always been this like tension between these two sides of what I do and what I'm interested in. And I think during the pandemic, I made an album called How I'm Feeling Now, which was made in like 5 weeks. Me at my computer, like texting with A.G. Cook and B.J. Burton, who were the two kind of main collaborators on that record. Like me, like recording my own vocals. And honestly, like, I'm not that good at that. Like, it was like, I was like comping. I was like, okay, I'm like going to try and like get into it and be like a vocal producer and like whatever. And like, there were moments of brilliance, but honestly, like a lot of it was really like really messy. But anyways,
I mean, I feel like that you dived into that. That's like,
Thanks.
People were making bread and watching Tiger King and you were there comping your own vocals.
It's... I mean, don't get me wrong. I was making a lot of banana bread too. Like, don't get me wrong. But yeah, so in the pandemic, I really kind of like delved into that kind of more underground side of me. And I don't know if this is the same for you, but like when I work within like the bounds of eras, I really feel like the eras have to be quite drastically contrasting for me to get like very excited about like what is coming next. And I think for me in ways that's also been like something that's kind of confused a lot of people and possibly like made the audience that I have quite like niche and cult in ways, because I'm always contradicting myself. Like one minute I'm like diving off the deep end into this.
Yeah, but I love that about you, because it's always changing and you're evolving as an artist. And I think that's what it really means to be an artist, is constantly exploring. I think even, you know, when you look at certain painters or whatever, with every art piece, they're kind of discovering themselves and figuring it out. Why can't we as musicians do the same, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Evolve and change and shift. And I think you do it really, really well.
Totally. And for me, it's like part of what keeps this interesting, you know, on a very like baseline selfish level.
We'll be right back.
So yeah, I kind of dived off of the deep end and went like very, very kind of like underground in the pandemic and like made this album that was essentially like club music, like escapist club music, I suppose. And then coming out of the pandemic, I felt like I really wanted to do the complete opposite of that. You know, I'd like been like to my label, like, I'm making an album in 5 weeks. You need to like figure it out. And they were like, like that's too far. You know how majors work, it's like a long, but you need the lead in time and like all that shit. And they were like, what? And I was like, just figure it out. And luckily we managed to figure it out, so that was great. But with the album after that, which was Crash, I felt that I needed to go completely the opposite way. And you know, I've been signed to Atlantic Records now since I signed my deal when I was 15 years old. I just turned 30 in August. So 15 years, you know, and I felt like the whole time that I have been within the major label system, I've been in ways this kind of difficult, highly opinionated person who sometimes has been considered hard to work with, sometimes has been considered to just like know what they want. You know, I've been like this chameleon, like that's been like sometimes hard for people to pin down. And on my final album in my, quite frankly, very old school deal, I just wanted to be like, you know what, I'm gonna play this game that people have wanted me to play for so long, but I have resisted. And I think that in itself was probably like hard for them to understand, especially as we approach an age of such like desire for authenticity within pop music. I feel like the concept of like being fake is the wrong word, but like not being like an authentic, true artist who like writes all of their own songs and da, 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 that feels like, oh my God, we don't know how to deal with that right now because everything needs to be so real. So in ways, like I probably like stressed them out even by suggesting that. But I was basically like, look, like I've never worked with an A&R guy. I'll have an A&R guy now. You can pitch me songs that I haven't written because I know I can write my songs. So like, let's just do the whole like 90s shtick, you know? And it was kind of fun. Like it was fun and interesting to work like that and to see the like cogs of the machine turn and to see like what they, you know, get excited about. And I suppose in ways I was kind of taking it as performance art, sounds a bit annoying, but like, you know, playing this character of that level of kind of pop girl. And it was really fun. And I also like really do stand by the music and I really love the music. And some of the songs I did write, some of them I didn't really write anything. And that for me has never been like a problem or like an issue of like validity. To me, it's like, you know, I think Rihanna's been pretty open about like sometimes she's not really like writing. And like, I don't fucking care. Like, I'm like, if Rihanna's singing a song,
that's she really stands by it, and she believes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's sick,
very much her.
Right. Doesn't matter who wrote the song. No one else can like body a song like Rihanna's gonna like you know what I mean? Like
it's
like I was kind of testing in ways myself, the label, but also the audience, because I feel like we live in this world right now where there is so much like desperation for and like fear for authenticity. And sometimes I'm just like, you know what? Like, who fucking cares? Like, sell me the dream. Like, I want like my pop stars to like sell me the fucking dream. Like, I don't care if you wrote it and like what you ate for breakfast and like if you're real or not. I want you to be chaos. Like, I want like Julia Fox as a pop star. Could you imagine? That would be like, she needs a music career. I love that.
I know that you keep like saying, you know, all these things about authenticity, but I can't help but still feel like this in some way is authentic to you. Like, when I'm listening to the songs, I am really like believing it. And I know that, I guess now you're a year into things and, you know, with Good Ones, which is one of my favorite songs. I'm upset. I think I texted you when it came out. I was like, I love this song so much. And that dropped last September. Like, what lessons have you learned along the way? Like, did you have to make any compromises? Because, yeah, it's like authenticity, but I'm just like, it's still you.
Well, yeah.
That's how I feel, at
least. No, totally, totally. And I suppose when I say authenticity, I mean, I think there's this like fear around like, I used to feel it actually. Like when I was younger, if I was like co-writing a song and maybe like I didn't do as much as the collaborator in the room or the producer, I'd be like, oh my God, like, am I a fraud? Like I would be worried about that because there is so much constant like questioning, especially of women in music. Like, are you the real deal? Like, are you actually just an idiot? Are you a puppet?
Definitely.
You know, and it's very frustrating. And I feel like sometimes a lot of the people who are asking these questions don't actually understand like the nuances of a studio session. And
definitely.
Why should they? They're not you know?
Yeah.
That's what I mean around like authenticity. Like, I feel like sometimes like mass collaboration can be mistook for not having control, when actually I would say like being a great collaborator, being able to delegate, being able to understand like where your strengths lie versus where maybe somebody else's strengths lie, is like a really, really vital and crucial skill, which takes like a really confident and knowledgeable creator to learn and do. Like, you don't just have that. You need to know yourself and your project inside out to be able to have the confidence to hand things off to people.
Yeah,
maybe that's what I mean by like authenticity. But the process was very authentic to my brain, I guess. But
yeah, because I feel like you started with this like, okay, main pop girl character, whatever. But I feel like, you know, along the way, like, did that character become Charlie? You know?
Yeah.
They merged. Yeah, I think so.
She did. Because I think back to the tweets that you referenced, you know, like, I've always just loved pop music and pop girls. Like, you know, I was like a Spice Girls head and a Britney head, you know? And there's something so like fantastical about pop stars. But then I also love like the freaks, you know? So I think that's the whole campaign has taught me that like, I can't pick between one or the other. I just love both of those worlds. And I think I will always just
walk the line between the two. Yeah. I love that. You know, your career has been in some ways defined by your transparency about your creative process. You know, fans have known your demos, your studio sessions, your collaborators. Like, you've even done like music focused group with fans. And sometimes like part of your process has been shared online. I guess like, do you think for that reason, like, your fans have a bit of like ownership or possessiveness over pieces of your career? And how do you feel like you've kind of navigated those minefields? Because again, like, another thing that you do is like walking the fine line between like transparency and protectiveness.
Yeah.
There's always some kind of duality with you. So like, talk me through this.
Yeah, it's, you know, the ownership thing is quite stressful. Like, it's definitely something that I was thinking about quite a lot. Like, and I think every artist, you know, has to deal with that. I'm sure that you do. Like, and again, it's difficult to talk about because you don't ever want to sound ungrateful for how much love and confidence and, you know, everything that the fans give you, because really, like, would we be here without the fans?
Exactly.
No, of course not.
Yeah, of
but
course.
With me, like, have you had like leaks, like music leaks.
Definitely. And right. I've been heartbroken about it. Like for me, I'm like secret, trying to keep it as tight as I can. And then I get leaks and then I get really upset about it. But I think for me, it's like keeping it a secret for as long as I can. And once it's out, just fucking letting go of it. Being like, it just doesn't belong to me anymore. But I think during the process, that's what really interests me is like, you've shared so much in the process of creating your music. You know, how's that been for you? Because that would be terrifying for me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I really don't. Like, I had like a quite bad leak situation like quite a while ago. And after that, I was very protective. I was like, this cannot ever happen again. I was like walking around like listening to my demos on like an MP3 player, like literally, you know, like
Walkman.
Yeah, literally, because I was like, this can never happen again. And then with the pandemic album in particular, I think I wanted to share that process a little bit more because it felt like very kind of right for the music, like this DIY kind of making it up as I go along type thing, whilst like the fan base were kind of just like sat at home, like watching the internet. It felt like we could have a dialogue via the sharing of music and the sharing of ideas. And yeah, I mean, it was scary because also, I don't know, I mean, you're a great singer. Like I would say like one of the defining things about your artistry is your voice. Yeah, I would say one of the defining things about my artistry is my voice too, but I'm actually not a good singer. Like I'm like pitchy and I sing a lot with auto-tune. Like that's just part of like the style that I've developed. So when I was like sharing my process, I was like not singing with auto-tune, like on Instagram Live or whatever. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, like when you see people like on, I don't know, like X Factor or whatever, and they like come into the audition and they're like, I'm amazing, I'm iconic. And then they sing and it's like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? This is a nightmare. I was like feeling myself. I was like, you know, singing melodies and I'm like, I am, like really like trying to like, like have a Mariah moment. And I'm like, oh my God, I sound crazy. Like they are going to think that I am like an insane woman. Like they just think that I think I sound amazing. But I'm like, I know I don't sound good. Like there's no auto-tune. It's going to get there. So that part was scary. Like having to really like reveal the reality. That was scary. But when it was intentional, the sharing of the music, it felt really positive. When it's out of your control, it makes you have a breakdown. That's basically it.
I think that makes perfect sense. I totally agree with you. Okay, so next thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, as women in pop music, I feel like we're constantly subjected to the opinions of other people. And I feel like a lot of people feel strongly about what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, how we should look, how we should sound, how we should promote our projects, who we should be collaborating with. And, you know, like I've said, I've been so in awe of your artistry and how singular and really unique it feels and how uniquely Charlie it all is. And I really feel that. And I would love to know how you got to a place of really trusting your instinct and trusting your voice and keeping like the outside voices at bay.
I mean, it's an ongoing learning curve, to be honest. I think people have this idea of me as this like constantly quite like brash and confident person. And don't get me wrong, like, yeah, there are times where I am that, but I'm also like constantly questioning myself and constantly in the throes of like, as I was saying earlier, kind of contradicting myself. And I'll like go away and be like, wait, like I want to like write like top 40 music. And then I'll be like, no, but then like everyone will like think that I don't care about like the underground anymore. But then if I make underground music, everyone think I'm a failure. Like I'm like constantly like back and forth. And this sounds very obvious, but I'm sure you have experienced this too. Like I think really the only way that I deal with that, I deal with outside voices, I deal with like the pushing and pulls of, you know, all that it is to do what we do, is I just have to think to myself, in 20 years time, am I going to love this piece of work? Am I going to be so proud to have worn this outfit, to have done this makeup, to have mixed the song with this person, to have sang those lyrics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually have had situations in the past where I haven't been, like, I have this song called Break the Rules, which I hate so much. I hate this song so much.
I was going to ask you about like old songs later down the line. That is one of my questions.
I want to get into that.
All right, carry on.
I hate this song so much. I wrote it in a writing camp and literally it was a writing camp for other people. Stop!
Okay.
Yeah, well, literally, right? So I wrote this song in a writing camp like years ago. It was like a camp with like Stargate and like Benny Blanco and whatever. And we wrote this song, right? And I said in the room, this is when I was like being really like, meh, like, you know, bitchy girl. This is probably like 2014. I was like, whichever artist sings this song, they've got no taste and they're a fucking idiot. Because this song sucks. Cut to a year later, I'm fucking singing it. I'm on stage being like, I don't want to go to school. And literally,
how did that happen? What happened there?
It was the external voices. This song's a hit. This is going to be a really big song. You should do this. This song's going to sink. Da, 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 all of that. And, you know, I was coming off of like Fancy, I Love It and Boom Clap. And I needed like another single.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, like, I guess this is the one everybody's like the most excited about. And, you know, it's like you listen and you believe them because they seem like very convincing in that moment. When I say they, I'm talking about the label, the publishers, the whoever is giving you all the opinions. So I sang it. And you know what? That song did sync well. I will give you that. Like they got that bit right. But like, do I stand by it as like, a piece of art? No. You know, like, whenever I think about that song, I'm like, oh my God, I hate this lyric so much. And I remember me standing in the studio, you know, obviously what I said was kind of like mean and bitchy, but essentially what I was saying was like, I don't think this is cool for me. And I should have listened to myself on that. And that snapshot in time is like a lesson that I try my best to remember when I'm like going through those moments of uncertainty where maybe I've written a song and I'm like, oh, I technically know this is good, but it doesn't feel like me. And then I get like the voices like, you should do this or da 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 da. I try and go back to the Break the Rules writing session and remember how I felt then, you know?
While we're in a break, why don't you take a moment to subscribe for free to At Your Service's newsletter, Service 95, at www.service95.com. We'll be right back.
How do you keep songs like I Love It and Boom Clap and Fancy, like feeling really fresh? Like I know that you, and really your relationship with your own, you know, musical legacy. And I know that, you know, you did some concerts in the UK, like your all eras shows where you played like some deeper cuts and like some fan favorites. And, you know, how do you keep that really exciting and fresh, especially because you've got so many albums as well and like going back and some fans love certain songs more and, you know, how do you balance that out?
Are you talking about in terms of like performing them or like when I'm writing them?
I think performing them, you know, because songs that then end up being really big, you're going to end up having to sing them for the rest of your life pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
How do you keep that fresh for yourself?
Well, to be honest, when I play Boom Clap live now, I like do like a kind of like different version. Mm-hmm. I don't really sing Fancy live anymore. I never sing Break the Rules ever. and I love it. Like, honestly, I love it to me. It's like really fun to perform live just because it goes off, you know, like it's like any kind of like relationship I have with that song of like, oh my God, I've played this so many times, immediately like leaves my mind when I see the crowd reaction. But I mean, I don't know if you have this with say like new rules, like when you start playing it, are you ever just like, oh my God, I've literally played this song like 50,000 times. But then like the crowd, I'm sure the crowd like goes off and you're kind of like, ah, but it's a classic and you like get into it, you know?
I think there's always this hope that like, as the albums go on, I'll make songs that are better than the ones that I did before. So then slowly I can like filter the old ones out.
Yeah.
Because people will want to hear the new ones more. But there are songs, you know, like New Rules will Be the One from my first album that I still get a real like thrill.
Oh my God, Be
them.
The One is like my favorite song you've ever made.
Oh,
by the way.
You.
Are you like sick of that song? Because I think that song is so like beautiful. I think it's very beautiful.
Thank you. Like, that song's carried me through my whole career. Like I don't think ever let that one go. Even now, I feel like later down the line, I feel like I still get the feeling like, I'm very thankful and grateful for that song. That I'm like, it, I feel like it has really cradled me through. So now even, you know, on this Future Nostalgia tour, I'm like, I can't let go of Be The One. It's
It's a special one. That's nice. Yeah, for me, like, I don't know. Like, sometimes when I'm, like, up there singing Boom Clap, I'm like, oh, I wish I could just sing, you know, track four of, like, random album that, like, no one really likes or whatever, you know? Because I'm like, I don't know if I want to, like, you know, in, like, 10 years' time when I'm 40, am I going to want to be, like, on stage being like, boom, clap. Like, yeah, I don't really know. Like, am I? But, you know, I probably will be. I don't know. It's like, maybe you find this, like, on tour, like, with the old songs that are, like, really successful. Sometimes I feel like I have these kind of, like, in-joke moments, or they become more, like, funny to perform. Like, because I feel like the hardcore fans who are often, like, right at the front, they kind of, like, know your relationship with the song, and you're kind of, like, joking. Those songs end up having these, like, weird in-jokes around them, which then can kind of make them fresh and fun to perform.
Fun. So your Crash tour, you've described as it being, like, one of your most full-on productions, like the staging, the lighting, the choreo, the backup dancers. Like, what's it been like for you finding new ways to translate your music to your fans? And do you miss, like, the intimacy of your earlier shows? I saw the snippets from your Lollapalooza show, and it's just like, I still feel like you have that really intense connection with the fans, even as the crowds get bigger and bigger. But I was just wondering, like, sometimes I guess when I go and see artists in, like, a smaller venue, like, I really get so many butterflies and get so excited. And I'm like, fuck, I think I want to go and do, like, a couple, like, smaller shows, just because, like, the energy in a small room.
Yeah.
Is somehow, I don't know. What do you feel?
No, I totally feel you. And I mean, I'm actually interested to know what you think on this, because obviously it's, like, such an achievement to be on, like, a sold out arena tour, which, like, you're on. And I haven't, like, quite reached the level of, like, playing arenas as a headliner myself, but maybe, like, the next album, who knows? But I have, like, played in arenas and in stadiums, like, opening for people or whatever. And I find them quite hard. Like, for me, like, the sweet spot is 5,000 people, you know, where it feels like you can, like, get the, like, vibe. And it doesn't feel, like, so small that you're like, oh, I wish this was bigger, but it doesn't feel big enough where, like, you can't, like,
you feel like quite... you can't really connect with everyone.
And, like, don't get me wrong, like, oh my God, like, if I could play in arenas, I'd be fucking playing in arenas all the time. But, like, sometimes I feel like when I have done that, I find it quite hard to connect. Like, I don't know, there's, like, a weird atmosphere thing. But then also, obviously, you get to, like, fly around the room in a basket, which is, like, iconic. And, like, you know, but do you know what I mean? Like, you get to, like, do that, like, level of production, which is, like, so amazing and, like, fun to, like, actualize. And, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's, like, how do I connect and do I miss the smaller shows? Like, yeah, sometimes, like, it's fun to, like, get really sweaty in, like, a 200 cap venue and, like, be like a freak. But then also, like, when I did Ali Pali, that was probably, like, my biggest headline show thus far.
I love Ali Pali.
You know, I was like, oh my God. You know,
it's really, really good.
Yeah.
I think I feel the same way. I think for ages, like, I did, like, arena support stuff and whatever. And I think it's different when you're really trying to win a crowd over and kind of, like, be like, please pay attention to
like
me. I know you're not here for me, but I'm really trying my best. And I've had those moments where I've been on tour, like, with artists, and some people couldn't give a flying fuck that I was there, you know? And I was really trying, I was like, please get up, jump, whatever. And they would stare at me like I was crazy. And then I think it's different when, you know, like, people are there to come and see you.
But there is
an air of, like, I don't know, like, I watched some, like, videos back of just, like, small little club shows, and I was like, I want to do both. So I was like,
I'm
so grateful that I get to do the arena stuff, but
of course, I love
the small shows. It's really fun. So I think we got to keep those alive for sure.
Yeah, totally. One other thing, I mean, I haven't seen the Future Nostalgia show IRL yet, but one of my favorite moments that I have seen online is the part where you kind of, like, turn the arena into a club.
Oh, yeah,
like, that is so cool. Like, when the, like, kind of
ceiling.
The little ceiling comes down.
Is that on electricity that
Yeah, it's happens? On. It starts at One Kiss, and then I do like the kind of club songs, and it changes. And that actually, that makes the room feel really intimate. And right. That was like my whole kind of idea of turning a big room into like a club show. It was fun.
Yeah. And that's cool. Like I really enjoy like that concept of like taking a space and kind of like forcing the space to become like a different space, you know. Like I think that's really smart, and I think that creates like a very like unique experience for a concert goer. Like, yeah, you're in a fucking huge arena, but like you feel like you're like sweaty and dancing in a club, and the artist on stage, you, like, looks like they are like dancing like in a club. Like, I think that's really cool, and I really enjoy that kind of like playing with that space. Like, I think that feels like really exciting. So I get you. Like, I love that you did that. I think it's really successful.
So before I end this amazing chat that we've had, I normally end it with lists, but before I get into my lists and asking you for some recommendations, like, I'd love to know what's next. Like, I know you're wrapping up your Crash tour. What have you got planned for us, Charlie baby?
Well, I'm going to South America, and that will kind of be the end of my touring this year. And then, not to be too much of a tease, but like, you'll have to wait and see. I'm really just saying that because I don't really know. Like, I'll be going into the creation phase again. But also, I really just want to like take some time for myself. I want to take some time to kind of explore the world a little bit. I was texting you when I was in Japan because I was like, oh my God, I'm having the best time. I'm in Tokyo. And I was just like being
and
a groupie.
And you sent me the
doing
insane
nothing.
List.
Oh my God. I went a bit overkill on that.
No, I
that.
Loved it. I was like, oh my God, there's so much to look through.
But yeah, I think I want to do a little bit more of that, you know, just like traveling for fun, not for work, and taking some time to kind of ground and prepare and gain energy to be creative again. I think that's kind of like where I'm at right now. So yeah.
I love that. Okay, so I like to end my conversations by asking my guests for two lists. And the first list that I would love from you, I feel like you're such a champion for new and upcoming artists. And I'd love to know who are five artists at the moment that you really, really rate.
Okay, so it's tough, but my five are Dane, Elio, Sevda Liza, I really hope I'm pronouncing that right, Alex G, and Hudson Mohawk. Some of them are new, some of them are, I've been around for a little while, but that's like five artists who I'm like really like listening to a lot right now. Some of them have recently released new projects, some not, but I'm obsessed. That's my five.
Amazing. And yeah, I think you did. I think Sevda Liza is, she's really cool.
Yeah.
And my second list and my last list, well, this one I'm really excited about because, you know, you're a hugely successful solo artist and you've written hits for others and you've done countless collaborations. And if someone's putting together a start from scratch crash course. Get it?
Nice. See what you did there.
In all things Charlie, what are the seven songs you'd need to include?
Okay. This was quite tough because I've got so many iconic bops.
So many iconic bops, yeah.
No, I was just like, oh God. Like, it was funny, like, putting this list together because, like, back to back, I'm like, wait, this is chaos. There's so many, like, random twists and turns in this list, but whatever. The list is Stay Away, which is the first song I ever released. Banger. Same Old Love, which was a song that I co-wrote for Selena Gomez, which I really love that song. Vroom Vroom, cult classic.
Love.
Track 10, which is sort of lesser known cult classic. Senorita, again, like a song I co-wrote with Ali Tamposi and Andrew Watt, our guy.
And, loved
for Sean and
the gang Pina.
The gang,
nice.
Yeah,
the gang.
And it was cool to like be a part of that song because I guess I hadn't like written for others in a while, and then I was like writing with like Watt and Ali, and they're just so like so that was fun. And then Beg For You, which is one from Crash that I sing with Rina Sawayama. So yeah,
Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much. I've loved chatting to you. This has been such a blast. Thank you for waking up early and doing this with me.
And thank you for having me. This was really cute and fun.
All right.
See you, babe.
See you, babe. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to you all for listening, and thanks to the wonderful Charlie XCX for joining me this week. You can find her list detailing the up-and-coming artist she thinks will be the next big thing in this week's issue of Service 95, our free newsletter available to subscribers via service95.com. Be sure to sign up and let us know in our Instagram comments what artists you'd add to Charlie's list. I want to remind everyone listening that I'm looking for your feedback. Let me know what lists you'd like me to open next week's episode with. It can be anything from food recommendations to the books I've been loving, the movies I've been watching, guides to cities I've been visiting, anything, anything at all. Write in to podcast@service95.com and ask me for my lists. I can't wait to hear from you all. Hope you're all really well, and see you next week for another very special episode of Dua Lipa at your service.